Welcome in everyone to the 65th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. We're your co-host Toby and Colin. Toby, how have you been, man?
I've been pretty fantastic. I'm excited to hear that our podcast is now a senior citizen.
65, yeah.
A real Larry Fitzgerald of goes podcasts.
Early bird special.
Yes.
We are going to talk this week, continuing our divisional deep dive series about the NFC West, one of the most exciting divisions not only for NFL but also for fantasy, in my opinion at least. As always, make sure you find us on Twitter and follow everything we've got going on over there, and also my weekly posts that I do following every episode on Reddit at r/dynastyff. And then also, if you guys are listening on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it, and we can read out your review here at the start of next episode. The division winner last year, the Seattle Seahawks, is who we're going to start off with first. And of course, you've got the ageless wonder running up and down the sidelines at head coach Pete Carroll.
Pete.
And new OC Shane Waldron. And honestly, I don't think the specific schematic past of Shane Waldron matters that much, because let's be real, we have a pretty good sense of the type of offense that Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks are going to be running this year. We know they're going to be run heavy, and in fact, supposedly the reason there was an offensive coordinator change in the first place is because Pete Carroll doesn't like letting Russ cook, and he in fact wants them to be even more run heavy. So
yeah.
Run comes first on this offense, and then, of course, you know those rainbow deep balls are going to be thrown very often, especially because of the personnel that Wilson has around him and, of course, his ability to do so effectively. Russell Wilson, Toby, he's getting up there a little bit. I think we're finally starting to look at the point where he's going to be on the second half of his career. It's going to be more of a decline from here on out, but he is still an absolutely elite asset in Dynasty. He's 32 years of age, and, you know, he has, I guess, up to 10 years left in the league potentially, but, you know, I think you can be comfortable thinking he's going to play four or five more at a pretty high level.
Easy.
He's not going to have the rushing upside that he's had in previous years. Like, if you look through his history, it's pretty ridiculous the amount of times he's, what does he have, 8 years in a row as a top 10 quarterback in the league, and
it's ridiculous.
He's just been nonstop, a complete elite fantasy asset, not only in Superflex, but also in single quarterback leagues. He's just one of those upper echelon guys. Do you still think he's going to be that going forward?
Yes. My big knock against Russell Wilson that I have watched film on, I have seen it in games last year, he is slower. Apart from that, every part of his game seems to just be improving and becoming more nuanced and more calibrated. I feel like his rainbow deep balls that you're citing, they're fantastic. He's reading the defense better than he has before. He's still mobile, but there were a couple, you know, huge holes on the left, and he kind of trundles now more than he sprints.
He doesn't have the same speed.
He doesn't have the same speed. Other than that, you're going to get what you've seen from him the previous decade.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, for me, is not a guy who's going to decline this year, even the next two.
I agree. He also has two very solid wide receivers, you know, at the top with DK and Tyler Lockett. Those aren't old guys. He's not going to lose his weapons. I don't expect him to change teams, despite the rumors and stuff that was going up at the start of this offseason.
Nah.
I think he's just pretty stuck to this offense. It's a good offense to be a part of, and he's very likely to continue as a quarterback one for a good few more years.
Yeah.
Behind him, you got Geno Smith and not a lot else. Geno Smith is 30 years old now. No one too exciting to me, but again, with many of these backup quarterbacks who aren't, you know, those young guys with some upside, it's basically he could be useful in Superflex, because if Russell Wilson gets hurt, any quarterback, any warm body playing the position is useful, and Geno Smith actually does provide a tiny bit of rushing upside as well, you know, so that's something I look for, even though he's older, that if he ever gets on the field, he'll at least be able to score you a little bit of points with his legs, too. So, I don't know, he's fine, but definitely not too exciting. Let's move to the wide receiver position. I've already mentioned at the top, you've got DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. So DK Metcalf, I think, is the hot topic here, because a lot of people are wanting to push him up into those top five dynasty wide receivers. He's very elite at what he does. He obviously has imposing size and speed to match.
And he took the leap from college to the NFL in stride. I think he did better than almost any critic expected he would.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question is he just going to continue to grow and continue to get better?
Yeah, he's only 23 years of age, which is pretty crazy that he's still that young. As someone who was not that into him out of college, I recognize the upside, but I had a lot of fears of what he could become. He's surpassed a lot of that. I think he's rightly rated in those top 10 wide receivers. I have him probably floating right around 5. I haven't ironed out the last, you know, few guys, because you get to a point where you're comparing him against, you know, and Davante Adams and Stephon Diggs, these guys that are 5 years older than him,
yeah,
but have a little bit more guaranteed production, you know, maybe barring Aaron Rodgers. But he definitely is in that conversation where I know there are people out there that rate him as the number one dynasty wide receiver, and I don't think that's a crazy take.
No, I think what makes him so special is that if and when people criticize his route running prowess, he can just make up for it with his blazing speed and formidable size.
Yeah.
I think anytime I'm like, but his routes just aren't that great, he just doesn't need that much space to get his hands on the football. So he would be in my top five for dynasty for sure.
I think that makes a lot of sense. One thing I will say, just the way I still view him, is going to be a little bit more of an Amari Cooper, where I expect that the amount of consistency we've seen so far the last 2 years when he's been really fantasy relevant, it's been a lot of weirdness in that he'll have a game where he gets a lot of yards and he doesn't get a touchdown, and then the next game he happens to get a touchdown on one of two receptions. He's still going to be a great guy. I expect him to be more of a volatile asset than he has been going forward. And honestly,
I can see that.
That's fine. But yeah. I think that's something that people put too much stock in. I'm still very happy to have DK. Tyler Lockett, on the other end, I think will never be as volatile as he was last year.
Last year, I'm ready to say, was a statistical anomaly.
I absolutely agree. Tyler Lockett is 28 years of age. I still think he is a very good wide receiver. He is good at a lot of things, getting open deep, getting open on short little routes, making him available to Russell Wilson. And he's someone that I would target because people were so disappointed in him down the stretch last year, up until week 17, I suppose, where I'm looking now, he scored 33 fantasy points, apparently, once fantasy ended. But besides that, the second half of the year last year was very disappointing, and people feel burned by that. They don't want those incredibly volatile assets. And especially in leagues where you have fairly deep benches, I'm fine with picking those guys up. You can ride the wave a little bit. If you have players like Tyler Lockett, Amari Cooper, there is so much volatility going on in fantasy football. Your team, your opponent's team, all the different players involved. A lot of these things balance out, and I think people are overrating the amount of volatility. I really like Tyler Lockett. He ended up crazily as the PPR wide receiver 8 last year. And
what?
And obviously, he's not getting ranked by anyone as the wide receiver 8, not even close.
No.
So I think he's a pretty good buy right now. I don't expect him to be the wide receiver 8, but as like a wide receiver 2, I totally think he'll get there again.
He will.
Behind him is a little bit more of question marks. You have their second round pick this year in Dwayne Eskridge, who I would project is probably going to be their number 3 on the field.
I would actually project that Freddie Swain will be their 3 and Dwayne Eskridge will be more of the special teams guy.
In terms of like body size, I could maybe see that. But Freddie Swain was, I believe, a 5th round pick. And Dwayne Eskridge was taken with the first pick they had in the second round this year. I'm a little bit surprised they decided to prioritize that type of wide receiver, but they did so. So just draft capital alone makes me think they want to get him involved a little more than just special teams. Dwayne Eskridge, we've talked about him because, of course, we've done a lot of rookie content. He's a smaller guy. He's a speedy as hell guy. He has great change of direction and all that. I could see him being a very useful returner, but I don't love his upside in terms of fantasy. I think he's locked in behind those other two wide receivers on his team for a good while. He could operate out of the slot potentially, and I could see him having some fantasy value there, but he definitely wasn't one of the guys I was heavily targeting in rookie drafts this year.
Yeah, I just also think, yes, he's locked in behind two fantastic wide receivers who he won't overtake. He's also locked into an offense that's extremely running back heavy. I don't even think whoever establishes themselves as the wide receiver 3 in Seattle is going to be an incredibly valuable asset.
That's true. And as you mentioned, you got Freddie Swain next, who I think is a pretty good sleeper type because he could be that number 3 or number 4, and I don't think people value him very high, but again, I don't think the upside is incredibly high with someone like Freddie Swain. He's just a bottom of your roster type player. And then I thought it was also probably worth mentioning because some of the biggest news that came out this week, they had two, in my opinion, big name undrafted free agent signings. And one of them was Tamorian Terry, who we will never hear his name again.
Yeah.
And the other is Cade Johnson. And Cade Johnson is somewhat of a similar mold to Dwayne Eskridge, that smaller, fast guy. But I expect him to make this roster because I don't think it's incredibly deep. And in terms of someone that's, you know, obviously an undrafted free agent, someone you can get really late, he's a good shot to take because I actually do think he's a reasonably good receiver.
Yeah, he has a really exciting profile to me. And it's just about what crazy circumstances can get him on the field.
In our pre-draft content, the difference between Cade Johnson and Dwayne Eskridge was negligible.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so the fact that one's a second-round pick and one's undrafted is kind of crazy. At running back, the perennially underrated Chris Carson is the clear guy. He got paid this year, and he's locked into this team for a while, which is great to see. He's in that age where I think if he didn't get paid now, you would start to get a little worried that he might not be around for that much longer. He's 26, which is where you start to see that fall off. But especially for 2021, I really like Chris Carson.
Me too. I think underrated sums it up very nicely heading into the season.
Mm-hmm.
He's just not a very flashy running back. There's nothing about him that leaps off the page to, I think, a lot of dynasty owners, especially when you're looking at the Seahawks and you have such truly flashy and exciting options. Chris Carson is going to be so reliable heading into this year.
So Chris Carson obviously was a bit hurt last year. He missed a big portion in the middle, but I would just throw out there that just on a points per game basis, what running back do you think he was?
Running back 10.
13.
Okay.
And do you know what? That's incredibly usable. That's so useful.
Yep.
He's not being drafted as a running back one, and he's going to continue to be right around that range. I don't expect his workload to decrease by a lot. Obviously, that points per game is including games where he left because he got hurt, and then he was fighting through some injury at the end of the year. I would not be shocked at all to see him as a back-end running back one again, and you can get him for incredibly cheap if you're in a win-now type scenario.
Playing behind Chris Carson, first name up is Rashad Penny,
mm-hmm.
the former first-rounder.
And he's not much anymore to me.
No. I want to mention Rashad Penny in the same breath as DJ Dallas, because which one has more value? To me, I think DJ Dallas does.
Yeah, he might. It's kind of a toss-up for me. One thing I think is worth mentioning is that, you know, Rashad Penny has been someone who's constantly injured. He had another knee procedure recently, less than a month ago, like a little cleanup procedure. But it's like, he just is one of those guys that's kind of proving he can't stay healthy. DJ Dallas, I think you can just throw in. There's other guys too. Travis Homer's down there. And I have a really hard time knowing if Chris Carson goes down again, who's going to be? Because last year we saw it. Sometimes it was Travis Homer. He was okay. Sometimes it was DJ Dallas. He was okay. Yeah. It's a bit of a murky field. You can absolutely take a shot on any of them, but I'm not hyped about any of them. Yeah. They also have the other name on the list is Alex Collins. He's who I would rate last.
I would rate him last as well. I don't think Alex Collins makes it out of camp.
Sure. I could totally see that. But yeah, basically for me, in terms of guys I'm targeting, it's Chris Carson and nobody else.
I would agree.
Gerald Everett is the first guy that I look at in this tight end room.
He's no longer a Ram.
They brought him in from a divisional rival, and I expect him to essentially be used as they used Greg Olsen last year. And when Greg Olsen was on the team, he wasn't a huge featured part of the offense, but he got a decent amount of targets, definitely more than I expected. And I think that Gerald Everett can do more with those targets. So that's why I'm reasonably excited for him, because he is a good receiving tight end. He's not going to be that blocking type. He's got some upside that I think he's worth the really late shot it would take for you to add him right now.
I agree. I also think Gerald Everett was underutilized in the Rams offense a crazy number of times. There was the emergence of Higbee kind of randomly. Everett's really good for who he is and crazy underrated, I think. I'm not very confident in him, which is, you know, and that scares me, you know, planting my flag and saying, everyone go acquire Everett, because I don't know how he's going to work into the offense. But in terms of just trying to get the most talented player you can for a great value, Everett.
I like it too. Then they have Will Dissly, who's showed flashes, but again, another guy that just deals with a lot of injuries. And last year he was healthy a decent amount, and he was playing behind other guys. So he definitely lost a lot of dynasty appeal to me. And then a draft pick last year, I still don't think someone that's going to make a huge impact right now. But give it a couple years, and I think he's an interesting name to monitor, and that's Colby Parkinson. He's just that all-around type of tight end that has some upside, because these are the type of players, you know, Will Disley or an Everett, they easily might not work out. And it could be only 1 year from now,
yeah.
And these could be the type of players that are off the roster. And you're like, okay, now Colby Parkinson, is that like Adam Trautman, where sure, he hasn't done much yet, but he just slid right into that role, and he's very interesting. Now we'll go to the second team, who lost to the Seahawks in the wildcard weekend last year. The LA Rams, an incredibly interesting team for fantasy. Sean McVay is the head coach and Kevin O'Connell is the OC, which doesn't matter because Sean McVay is the real OC.
Yeah, it's one of these teams that has we'll talk about the Niners in a little bit. Essentially a figurehead is the OC.
Same also Cliff Kingsbury with Arizona. Apparently this division just... The OCs don't really matter.
Yeah, most importantly, Cliff Kingsbury. I don't think they actually have named an OC.
They don't. Yeah. It's just him right now.
Yeah.
Either way, yeah, Sean McVay, we know this offense is going to be 12 personnel quite a lot, and it's going to be a lot of motion. The running backs are going to be used in the passing game and potentially a lot in the red zone. There's a lot of upside in this creative offense, especially because they have a new quarterback who's in town, and it is Matt Stafford.
Nice.
Coming from the Lions, I am excited about Matt Stafford. I think he's a little bit underrated right now in Dynasty. I'm excited about the receiving options around him. Both Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods are very good, refined wide receivers. And I think this could be an efficient offense, which honestly we haven't seen a lot of, because I think the biggest difference between what Stafford had in Detroit and what he now has on the Rams is a really good system.
Yeah.
Matt Patricia and the coaches before him, he just hasn't really had a lot. And sure, he had some good wide receivers around him on the Lions, but I don't think their scheme really put him in a great position to succeed. Didn't have a running game basically ever that helped him out. And he has all that now on the Rams. So I think he could really step up and be an impressive dynasty riser this year.
I would agree. I'm just happy for Stafford too. Get out of Detroit. Go to LA.
It's an exciting just for NFL terms. Can't wait to watch this team.
Playing behind Matt Stafford, you got John Wolford.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy. And I just don't think Stafford's going to go out with injury. Like this man's going to play through whatever he's got.
That's fair. He does seem to play through everything. You never know. If you break a leg, you break a leg. But yeah, John Wolford, he came in last year a little bit. Played okay, honestly. I don't know. He's not someone I'm hyped about, but he's 25, and we've only seen him a little bit, and he looked okay. So I think he is a decent backup to take a shot on for sure in Superflex. The wide receivers, as I already mentioned, you got those top two again, much like the Seahawks. You've got Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, and these are the two guys, because remember, we're talking 12 personnel here in this offense. They're on the field all the time.
Yeah.
They can both play in the slot. They can both play out wide, and they're both really good at what they can do. And now they're both playing with the best quarterback that either of them have ever had throwing them the ball. Do you expect a big jump up from both or either of these guys this year? Or is there one in particular that you're really targeting?
I don't project a huge bump up for Cooper Kupp. I feel that him and Goff had really good rapport, and the routes that Kupp is running a lot of the time aren't anything too crazy, and they're more over the middle slot type stuff. I think Robert Woods will see a bit of an uptick in his production. I think Stafford helps the team as a whole more than his individual wide receivers, and I think just the passing game will be better. So I think marginally they're going to be better, and I think Woods will benefit most from it.
Okay.
But I think Stafford allows for McVay's offense with the tight ends and running backs and just people to be more open a lot more of the time.
Yeah. That's definitely possible. I think the one thing that I will say, though, is of the two, how I see them valued in startups, I think Cooper Kupp is the one that seems to be falling a little bit too much. Like, Woods definitely has a little bit more name value, and so he has pretty much maintained around that same range for a while, which is probably still undervalued for whatever reason. These receivers always happen to be, but Kupp, since the trade, has seemingly fallen down ADP. I don't know if that's just happenstance, but he has become a value enough that I think I would definitely go to look to target him.
It's a total coin flip, in my opinion, who finishes better at the end of the season.
They're close, for sure. And Stafford, I think, can utilize both of them. I think both of them have a high enough floor that I'm quite excited about starting either on my roster. The only difference that I could see that a lot of people would have fears of is Kupp has definitely dealt with a lot more injuries, but I'm not crazy worried about that. I'm pretty excited to have him as that wide receiver 2 or 3 on my team. Another thing that would be interesting is that if they do start playing with some three wide receiver sets, those two last year would have been playing with Josh Reynolds, who was more of an outside guy. Now, their number three looks to be Van Jefferson, who is absolutely that slot guy. So that could push them both more out to the outside.
Even their, you know, exciting new rookie that they've drafted, Tutu Atwell, there's no way he's going to be playing on the outside. Is there?
I would guess Tutu is going to be mostly like a gadgety type of guy.
Yeah, I agree. So,
but he could be like outside to run in a straight line and spread the field potentially. Yeah. But other than that, it's kind of a guessing game of who's mm-hmm. going to be the third guy on the field.
I mean, speaking of running in a straight line and spreading the field, yeah. DeSean Jackson has mm-hmm. now joined the Rams.
Yeah, and so for half of a game, he'll be really good at doing that. And then, yeah, so you've got really all three of those guys who can rotate in. I have said many times that, you know, Tutu Atwell is not someone I'm interested in. I think he was incredibly overdrafted, and I'll be surprised. Happy to be proven wrong if someone that small can be super effective in the NFL, but all the best to you, Tutu. I think it'll be a tough road. Van Jefferson is also someone I've never been that hot on. I think he can be that Hunter Renfro type of guy, and that's just not a lot of upside to me. And DeSean Jackson is fairly old, and of course he can, you know, run those deep routes and get up over defenders, but there's not a lot of dynasty upside there anymore. So I'm not really excited about any of these guys, but if I have to pick one, I think Van Jefferson is most likely to be on the field as the third guy most often. Obviously, comparing him to DeSean Jackson, he's much, much younger. I just think he doesn't have a very high ceiling. They also spent a 7th-round pick on Ben Skowronek. He's a bigger guy. There's always upside because you have a bit of a murky depth chart here, but I'd say he's very clearly the 6th guy of these 6.
Yeah, I would agree.
The running backs, someone that everyone seems to be incredibly hyped over, Cam Akers.
They love him. They absolutely love
him. He has rocketed his way up the ADP charts. Everyone just seems to be taking him earlier and earlier and earlier. I've seen him go a lot of the time in the first round now.
And yeah, I mean, credit to you. You've loved Cam Akers ever since watching film of him at Florida State.
That's true. I did really like him last year.
And he's definitely earned, I think, his role as a bell cow in this offense. The reason why he's going in the first round, people are prognosticating that it's him and only him.
So I just quickly looked it up. On Sleeper's ADP, and this is obviously Dynasty Startup Drafts, he's going as the running back 8 now. So
oh my goodness.
That is very high. That is above players like DeAndre Swift, Najee Harris, J.K. Dobbins, Zeke Elliott, Antonio Gibson, Aaron Jones, Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Oh, that's just dirty.
He has risen to, other than Jonathan Taylor, the top of all of last year's rookies, and some guys like Zeke and Aaron Jones, who have some somewhat long contracts and proven track records. People are very hyped about him. I actually do think it's gone a bit too far, and as much as I loved him last year, I actually didn't end up with him that much for whatever reason, just didn't happen to be in that middle of the draft, but I'd more likely be selling him now, and absolutely I do think that there is a decent chance that he is a true bell cow, mm-hmm. but my issue is that people seem to be shoving away the possibility that Daryl Henderson is still relatively involved. I'm not confident just because Todd Gurley was an absolute bell cow in this offense that they're going to do the same thing with Cam Akers. And putting him at running back 8, that's saying, okay, he's going to be this bell cow type.
And there's no one else. And Daryl Henderson has been a letdown almost ever since he's been in the league.
Last year, I chose him as a bust. Like, yeah. I'm not a huge Daryl Henderson guy, but I think he's still relevant enough. They used him last year, and of course, sure, you're like easing your rookie in. But Cam Akers went off at the end of the year, and Daryl Henderson was injured through that time. He wasn't out of every game, but he wasn't playing at 100%. I fear that he's going to come in just a little bit too much to have that crazy high upside that people are wanting out of Akers. He's a really good talent. He's a really good receiver. The ceiling is incredibly high, but I think if you're already buying him at first round ADP, I'd be mm-hmm. willing to move off. You know, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire is one of my buys. If I can move Akers for Clyde and more,
that's a good trade.
I'm going to do that.
I would too.
Then you obviously have Henderson. He's got reasonably good handcuff upside. Again, he's not a player I love, but I expect that if Cam Akers goes down, he would step into a very large role. So that alone has a lot of standalone value. Then down the depth chart, another late pick of theirs this year, they took Jake Funk, and He's an okay prospect. He's just...
He's depth.
A depth guy, yeah. He needs some injuries to really see the field. If there's one injury between either one of Akers or Henderson, you could see him spell a little bit, but he's definitely not someone I'm really excited to go get.
It's 12 personnel, so the tight ends should be important.
I think they absolutely will
be. And they sure will be blocking a lot. First up, Tyler Higbee. They love Tyler Higbee so much, they let Gerald Everett get on out of there during free agency. Tyler Higbee, how high do you value him right now?
Okay, interestingly, like, he was a pretty big letdown last year. And I don't think of myself as being like, oh yeah, I love Higbee. He's going to be great. But I was just on that same sheet that I just went off of with Sleeper's ADP lately. And I found him going at tight end 18.
It's too low.
He was going to be my dynasty buy this week. I have five hints right here. And then I remembered that I'm an idiot and we're doing this team today. So here they are sitting here. And I'll just, you know, name off some things because I think he is a really good buy right now. Obviously, Gerald Everett's gone. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And realistically, Josh Reynolds also leaving. He had a lot of targets last year too. So there were a lot of vacated targets in this offense. He's going at the tight end 18, which I don't really understand. He's not an old guy. He's just disappointed his owners last year. They did draft Jacob Harris, who we'll talk about soon. And last year they also drafted Bryson Hopkins. But the way I view those two guys are not people that are going to step up in a huge way this year. Sure, they might be on the field because I do expect some 12 personnel here. But the way I view this offense is that Tyler Higbee last year was not on the field as much as you'd expect. And a lot of that was, of course, Gerald Everett. And this year, he's going to be on the field all the time. And he's going to be targeted a lot. I could easily see him as the number three target on this offense. Sure, maybe years down the line, I don't have a lot of hype for him. Buy him now at 18th. I expect him to absolutely outperform that this year and then sell him. I don't know. It seems to me like, you know, he's not someone I was like, oh, I love Tyler Higbee, but he has crazy upside because he's a good
receiver. He should be being taken at the tight end 12 at minimum.
That's the area I think he should be because I'm looking at the list and it's like, just players that I'm not that hyped about. It's like, why is this guy going ahead of him? That just doesn't really make sense. So yeah, I think there's a lot of upside. And realistically, in redraft, he's one of the tight ends that I think should be starting on a roster week one because there's enough upside there. So I already mentioned a couple of them. You've got Jacob Harris, who was a fourth round pick, and he's a converted wide receiver. So that's an extra reason. I don't expect him to be on the field a ton year one because he's switching positions. Yeah. But for Dynasty, I really like him because he has a lot of upside. He is a monster of a man. Obviously, at tight end, he's probably pretty average, but he's a great athlete for how big he is. And he can
be how to catch a football.
Yeah, he's going to be that mismatch type guy. I think they're trying to replace Gerald Everett with him, who's that good athlete receiving type who isn't going to be a great blocker, obviously, as a wide receiver. I like Jacob Harris a lot as someone that they kind of took off the board. He wasn't a big name pre-draft. And then everyone starts to look into it and is like, oh yeah, no, as a tight end, this guy's going to be great. And I think he absolutely can be great in a couple of years. Then they have Bryson Hopkins, who they took last year. I think he's decent. He's much more in that Higbee mold. And he would be my best guess of who will be on the field a decent amount this year.
He'll probably be the tight end too.
They do also still have Johnny Munt, though, who I believe is more of that blocking guy, but he's not a dynasty asset you're super hyped to. I could see him being another dude, though, that will be on the field a decent amount, and so he takes away a little bit of the upside away from those other guys.
Yeah.
I just think if you're looking at this tight end room, you'll want Higbee, and for 2021, not really anyone else.
Yeah.
Next, we'll be moving over to the Arizona Cardinals. As we already mentioned, you've got Cliff Kingsbury, and at OC you also have Cliff Kingsbury. They just do not have an OC.
Cliff likes his money, and he wants to be paid for both jobs.
At quarterback, obviously you have Kyler Murray.
He will be operationalizing Kingsbury's air raid system.
And then behind him, you've got Colt McCoy. So Kyler Murray, he has definitely jumped his way up in that upper echelon of fantasy quarterbacks. He's a great runner, incredibly elusive. Honestly, we were talking about Russell Wilson, his speed, his elusiveness. That's a little bit of what Kyler Murray's got right now. His ability to just avoid tacklers is very impressive.
Yeah.
I think at this point, he's somewhat undoubtedly in that top end of quarterbacks. Like, I know he's going to be taken in the first round of a super flex.
And as he should.
Mm-hmm. How high do you rank him against the? You got your Mahomes, you got your Josh Allen, your Lamar Jackson, your Herbert, these top end guys. Are you taking him at 2 in that list? Or
I think I'm taking him at 3.
And who would be your two then?
Josh Allen.
Okay.
I would have Josh Allen a hair over Murray.
Yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. I'm sure there are a lot of people that somewhat disagree on that top end group, but as of right now, ADP does have Patrick Mahomes 1, Josh Allen 2, Kyler Murray 3.
Okay.
So that is standard, but I do think person to person, that group is going to be jumbled quite a bit. I'm a little bit less hot on Kyler than I would say other people are, mostly because I recognize he is absolutely a fantastic fantasy football quarterback. I'm not 100% sure he is a fantastic NFL quarterback. And that doesn't mean he's bad. I'm sure he's going to be a starter for a long time. He's not in jeopardy of losing his job. I'm just not sure if he's going to get that Patrick Mahomes money anytime soon.
Hmm.
He absolutely could. That's in his range of outcomes. But I still see enough mistakes on tape and, you know, little things that he really needs to work on before he can hit that next level and be one of those like guys that I'm confident, okay, we've got ourselves a Russell Wilson who's going to be really good for until he's 35.
Also, just small side note, Kyler Murray, man, this guy pouts a lot.
He does, that's true.
And I would love to be a bigger fan of him, but there are times I'm like, just stop pouting.
He kind of reminds me of Aaron Rodgers in that way. 100%, that's very true. But yeah, he's very good for fantasy. Oh, he's going to run a ton. I would not be shocked in the slightest if he's the quarterback one in 2021. He has that crazy type of upside. Then yeah, already mentioned, but Colt McCoy. You know, we were talking about earlier with Seattle. You've got Geno Smith. It's like, yeah, he can run a little bit if he's on the field. So sure, I'll take the shot if I'm in a deep league because...
Sure.
Again, any warm body, especially if they can run a little bit, I'll take him and start him in Superflex if I need to. That wide receiver, you've got someone that I would say is worth a second round pick in David Johnson, DeAndre Hopkins.
I apologize to all our Houston viewers. That's a low blow. D-Hop, he's amazing.
He is definitely amazing. Starting to hit that age where supposedly these guys are going to fall off.
Yep.
So it's something you have to be aware of because he is 29. But he is, at this point, still an absolutely elite talent.
Yeah.
I'd say you've got 2 years of guaranteed top-end production. Like, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be scared of him falling off until his, like, 32 season. And a part of this offense, I think, is what's so exciting because the other wide receivers around him, there's some decent guys, but it is so obvious. It's similar to a Davante Adams or a Michael Thomas where you're like, oh,
he's the one.
He's the guy, and he's going to soak up so many targets. And he can do enough with those targets. He has a good enough quarterback to get him the ball when needed that he's just locked in to one of those wide receiver one spots for the next few years. I'm definitely very willing to, you know, eat his decline a little bit in a couple years if I'm competing right now.
Yep.
It's absolutely worth it. I think that the argument could be made that if you're not in that position, peak value is around now before it's going to start to drop off a little bit because you can be stuck with, like, you know, Julio is 2 years removed. And 2 years ago, how people valued Julio in Dynasty is different from now. He has definitely
very
dropped
so.
Off. So unless you're really going for it, I think now could be the time. You got to move him a little bit, especially as we get nearer to the season. Some of these redraft hyped up assets will get pushed up a little bit in Dynasty. I might look to sell him, but he's going to help you win championships. He's
absolutely
a great wide receiver.
Just look back to last year at the number of targets he had, which surprised me. I was very much hyping up Hopkins last offseason. I did not think he would get the targets that he got. So I'm ready for more.
The next wide receiver we have, I would say there is three other guys who absolutely could be on the field a decent amount. You've got Christian Kirk, who isn't nearly as exciting as he was a couple years ago.
Very true.
But I still would not be surprised to see him relevant and on the field a decent amount this year.
I just don't want anything to do with him. And I know he's going to be on the field. And I know he's going to catch a few touchdowns. I have a fundamental distrust for Christian Kirk.
He reminds me a little bit of Anthony Miller. But that's probably not even fair. Because Christian Kirk has been better than Anthony Miller, I would say, by quite a bit. But it's just how I look at these guys. Of like, yeah, there was so much interest and excitement a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it just hasn't really happened.
I also think one of the reasons I'm not excited about Christian Kirk as much as it could be is because they drafted Rondale Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And Rondale Moore is a better Christian Kirk.
Well, Rondale Moore I do expect to be more of the slot guy. Kirk plays a little more
on
the outside, but I could still see his spot on the field being taken by Rondale Moore. Only thing I'll say about Christian Kirk is his contract's up at the end of this year, so there's possibility you see him go to a good situation with less target competition.
And yeah, maybe.
He is a boom. Unless he does absolutely nothing this year, I would definitely be wanting to hold him just for now to see, at least until next offseason, where he lands.
Yeah, that's fair.
You have Rondale Moore, as you said, a second-round pick, someone that I love the tape of. There's... Mm-hmm. Definite red flags when it comes to fantasy for me. I wasn't targeting him over some other guys in that second round of rookie drafts, but I love Rondale Moore. I love what he's going to bring to this team, and I think the scheme fit is very good. They're going to use him creatively. Cliff Kingsbury is absolutely able to get someone open in space, especially when he has the talent like Rondale Moore, and I think he can do great things out of that slot used dynamically. The other guy they brought in, new recruit, and there's even been a little bit of camp hype about him. It's okay. AJ Green. AJ Green's a bit of a weird case because it wasn't that long ago where he was incredible.
That was pre his ankles deteriorating.
Yeah.
I don't think you can stomach trading for him for any significant amount because you know, yeah, he might have a couple great games, but... Will you have started him for that? Like, will you actually know when he's going to do well? And then, inevitably, when he's injured and out of your lineup, will you be able to trade him off for something?
Yeah, you aren't paying up for him right now. He's a crazy late shot. I would definitely be willing to roster him and see, but, you know, I'm not even taking a shot at him in redraft right now. Yeah. And he's an aging asset, so he's not someone I'm excited about. Before we move on from these group of wide receivers, Rondale Moore, I just want to circle back. Just take a shot in the dark. His rookie season, do you think he'll have a significant rookie impact?
No, I think he'll be wide receiver 40.
Okay, I'd take 40.
I think he's going to have a couple really sick splash plays. I think he'll start to emerge in, you know, weeks 13 to 16, that type of thing.
Yeah, I could see that. I kind of see him the way that I see Kadarius Toney. We were talking about that a couple weeks ago, where because there's other guys around, it probably was going to take a little bit. You're going to see some gadgety, maybe, returning stuff.
I think Toney will finish over more, just on draft pedigree alone.
I rate them closely in Dynasty for rookie drafts, and I rate them closely for 2021. I'd take that bet. I'd go Rondale.
Oh. I'm so excited to just be betting on a weekly basis.
That's very true. They also, down the depth chart, have Andy Isabella, who the guy who was truly replaced by Rondale Moore. That slot role has absolutely disappeared. Yeah. And then Keyshawn Johnson, just a warm body who could come in if needed.
He's not going to impact your team.
No, I agree. At running back, you have the two-headed monster of James Conner and Chase Edmonds. Toby, right off the bat, who do you want? Who's finishing higher?
Conner.
Ooh, Conner.
Conner.
I agree. Yeah. And that is absolutely not consensus across the board.
People are so down on my guy, James, and I totally get why.
I would say I'm down on James, but I'm also apparently pretty down on Chase Edmonds because... I don't really see him being that type of guy to ever soak up a huge workload. I do expect him absolutely to be used as more of the pass catcher, but if I'm going to take a shot on them, especially if I'm accounting for cost right now, I'm absolutely taking a shot on James Conner because James Conner has some ceiling to him.
It's also that I totally understand. People are saying, I project that he's going to get injured. Everyone and their mama thinks he's going to get injured, but the Arizona Cardinals staff aren't all stupid idiots. Like, they have made him do physicals. They've given him at least $1 million. It's not a guarantee that he's going to get injured. He's still going to put up fantasy numbers. There's a reason he's still in the NFL. He's not untouchable. He's not such damaged goods that teams aren't going to be playing him on the pitch. James Conner's still going to go out there. He's still going to rack up, I would say, 8 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an RB1. James Conner's not going to be Belkay playing every snap, but he's also still going to be playing a whole bunch. Like, I feel like in people's minds, they have him playing 4 games total. That's just not going to happen.
You know me.
Yeah.
Like, why are we assuming he's even going to be injured? And to clarify, he made $1.75 million. So,
yeah, okay. Yeah, so, you know.
Injuries are not sticky. People are just injury prone until they're not. Don't lean too much into someone's been injured before, so they're going to keep getting injured. Happens every year where there's some new guy. Oh, it's Will Fuller. He's always hurt. Oh, wow. He just played an entire year. It just happens.
Yeah.
James Conner, I don't think is elite. I don't think he is amazing. I expect him to basically do what Kenyon Drake did last year. And Kenyon Drake was vastly overdrafted, as I predicted he would be. But as long as you don't have those crazy expectations where he's, for some reason, a first round pick in redraft, you're going to be a part of a very efficient offense. How many goal line carries do you think Chase Edmonds has in his career?
I'll say under 10.
One.
So, yay.
You've done it. Yeah, I think James Conner is going to have a lot of red zone opportunities because this is a really good team, a really good offense, and he's way bigger than Chase Edmonds. Actually has run the ball in the goal line in his career up to this point. And
he's a good running back.
He's definitely flashed. Like last year, he didn't look that good. He looked fine at the start of the year before he started dealing with injuries. But in the same offense last year, Kenyon Drake didn't look very good. He somehow got stuffed every game, it seemed, on the 1 yard line. And I think James Conner absolutely can convert some of those touchdowns and be a more valuable dynasty asset than Chase Edmonds is. So
I agree. We're in the James Conner camp.
I guess so. I don't even hate taking the shot on Chase Edmonds. I don't mind it, but that's a pretty expensive shot to take right now. And James Conner is, for whatever reason, way cheaper. There's also Eno Benjamin back there, and he looks to be the guy if either one of these gets hurt, because I do not believe anyone on this team will be a true bell cow.
No.
So Eno Benjamin, I would say if James Conner gets hurt, I don't know how they're going to run that offense.
I don't know. It's definitely not Cliff Kingsbury's system to just have this one three down back. It won't happen.
But yeah, I would say if Chase went down, clearly Eno Benjamin can step into that role and be the pass catching guy. I'm not as sure if James Conner goes down, then there is potential that you see Chase Edmonds take on a big workload. I just don't think that's the plan. So he has that upside, but unless you are absolutely banking on that injury, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
The tight ends for the Arizona Cardinals are they're there. Max Williams is the first name that I will mention.
And honestly, he is realistically the only name we could mention because the other guys are pretty irrelevant. And I also think Max Williams will be fairly irrelevant. Max Williams is likely to be the one on the field, but often they will have none on the field.
And you need to remember, we're not just dissing just Max Williams. Last year, there were tight ends that played in Arizona. They just didn't impact the game.
Mm-hmm. And he's not someone I want in Dynasty. He's not someone I want even for just 2021, even though he's clearly the tight end one on this team to me, because the other two names we have here are Ross Travis and Ian Bunting.
Are these friends of yours?
So yes, this is a scheme that won't use that many tight ends. They have enough wide receivers that they are not going to be heavily targeting these tight ends.
And pass catching RBs and a QB that's going to take off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just not really in the cards that they will be relevant. Yep. But yeah, Max Williams is clearly the one, I guess. Finally, we will get to the fourth team on our list, and that is San Francisco 49ers. You have Kyle Shanahan, and I feel like we've talked about Kyle Shanahan's system like 100 times in this series already because everyone wants to emulate it. You know what it is. And the OC, another placeholder, you've got Mike McDaniel.
Mm-hmm.
We know what this offense is going to do. We know they're going to have motion. They're going to use a million running backs, and they're all going to be incredibly efficient. And one thing we don't know is who's going to be their quarterback.
The ball. I can't wait. Who's it going to be? Jimmy G or Trey Lance? It really is a super difficult question. Do you take Jimmy G, who is experienced?
Fine.
Knows how to run the offense. Will make fewer mistakes, probably, than the explosive, exciting number three overall, Trey Lance.
I think it will be a lot of Jimmy Garoppolo this year.
Okay.
I obviously would prefer it to be Trey Lance because that'd be way more exciting and way more fun for fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think they're going to stick with Garoppolo possibly for the whole year, especially if they're doing reasonably well. Maybe they bring in Lance at the point that they're knocked out of playoffs or something like that. But I do not expect them to very quickly make that transition. But I could also be wrong and it could happen. Obviously, this is just my projections. Trey Lance feels like the type of player you want to, you know, nurture into the league a little bit. Don't need to throw him right to the wolves. And Jimmy Garoppolo is a competent enough quarterback that that's the direction I expect them to go in. But Garoppolo's not someone I'm hyped about in Dynasty at this point. I expect he'll probably continue to be a starter just on another team next year.
Okay.
But already he's not the type of guy that's putting up a ton of fantasy points in the first place. And to me, it's clear. I mean, obviously, when you're trading up to take someone at third overall, they're looking to transition over to this insanely exciting Trey Lance, who's I'm excited to start for fantasy.
I think there's no way Jimmy G plays the whole year just because he's one of the first three picks. I think he's too exciting. I think there's going to be too much pressure, not just from fans, but from the front office, the moment that they're even, you know, 2-2 type thing.
Sure, but I think it's absolutely realistic that they just go back to 2019 form and make a clear run where they're one of the top teams in the NFC.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And then...
like, if that's the case, yeah. If that's the case, then Jimmy G's secure.
Yeah, I just think that's absolutely a possibility. They have a pretty good roster. Last year was...
marred by injuries upon injuries.
Crazy
upon
how
injuries.
Many injuries they had.
I mean, just to lose Jimmy G and Kittle alone. It's like, okay, well...
And like Nick Bosa and, you know...
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely crazy injuries. They may not be as good as they were in 2019, but I think they're a reasonable contender to make a huge jump forward again. So it's hard to project them, but basically for starting people in fantasy, I'm not hyped to start Garoppolo, whereas I am excited to start Trey Lance because
agreed.
I would guess that the second he starts, he is the number two rushing quarterback in the league, maybe like number three if we're talking Kyler, but like he's up there. He's going to rush like crazy and he's going to put up so many rushing yards and rushing touchdowns that he could be bad and he'll still be a great fantasy quarterback.
I agree. They do have Josh Rosen on the roster,
and
but
that's enough of that.
That's enough. There's two amazing quarterbacks. Josh is on the pitch. Mm-hmm.
They're wide receivers. They've got a clear two guys and then honestly a pile of question marks. Let's talk about the top two. You've got Brandon Ayuk, who really established himself last year and is someone I'm excited about, and Deebo Samuel, who was largely injured last year, but also is a player that I think is a good person to buy in Dynasty.
Very much so.
These are the two wide receivers that are going to absolutely lead the charge on this team. I expect them to both be very relevant, be very involved, be on the field pretty much the whole time. And it's difficult for me to project which of these guys is going to be targeted more, but they have their individual roles. They're both very good at it. And I would not be shocked to see this team have two top 24 wide receivers being these two players.
I would be surprised if they're both top 24 if Kittle's healthy the whole year. I think Kittle will eat into it a bit too much for them both to be up there. But man, both these guys are so exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I think Deebo Samuel will have more PPR value, but that's just, it's so hard to know.
I think the ceiling is higher with Ayuk. There's that chance that he levels up yet again, because I think the jump already from college to what he did in year one was so impressive. And sure, if you're looking at counting stats, he absolutely benefited from the fact that he didn't have a lot of Deebo Samuel to compete with. He definitely didn't have a lot of Kittle to compete with, and even a lot of the running backs were hurt last year. So all of these things propped up his rookie season totals, but what I saw on tape was a good enough wide receiver that I'm expecting him to continue to rise just in terms of his talent. So if I had to bet, I think I would go on the Ayuk side, but I really like both of these guys, and they have their individual roles.
And here's the pile of question marks. I'm going to read all the names. Richie James, Mohamed Sanu, Jalen Hurd, Benny Fowler, Juwan Jennings, Travis Benjamin, and Austin Watkins. Those are all seven guys that are currently on the depth chart.
Yeah.
If I'm going to go out on a limb, I think Richie James is the best of all of them.
Because I would agree. He feels like the one that I expect to be the third guy on the field.
He's had proven successes in their offense.
After that, it's tough.
Jalen Hurd is exciting.
Yeah.
You know, he's battled injuries. We haven't gotten to see his full potential.
Quite a lot, yeah.
He might be my, I guess, four. And then the five, you could just roll the bingo balls, man. All I don't know.
It's crazy difficult. So yeah, you have Benny Fowler, who came over from New Orleans. You have Mohamed Sanu, who is not someone I want in Dynasty, because even if he hits, he's a little too old at this point. Juwan Jennings, I feel like, has proven that he's just a depth guy at this point. Travis Benjamin doesn't have a lot of upside anymore. And Austin Watkins, as much as a few people seem to really like him, he ended up as an undrafted free agent, so he doesn't now have a lot of upside either. I would agree. I expect it to be Richie James on the field, and then Jalen Hurd is the guy I'm the next most excited about, but... it's hard to project any of these guys having like long-term success. And if I have to pick one, it is Richie James pretty easily.
Okay. Big Richie James fans here at Deep Dive Dynasty.
Sure. The running backs also, unsurprisingly, if you know this offense, there's a lot of guys. So you've got Raheem Mostert, Trey Sermon, third round pick this year. You also brought in Wayne Gallman. Then don't forget Jeff Wilson, although he is injured. We'll talk more about that. You've got Elijah Mitchell, sixth round picks. They not only brought in Wayne Gallman, they used two of their picks on running backs. And then you still have Jermichael Hasty, who looked pretty decent last year and could be involved as well.
This is another running back room. It's just so hard to know.
And there could be so much fantasy upside to come out of this running back room.
Yeah.
But, like, it could be a surprise. It could be Wayne Gallman who just, like, explodes. And he's, like, clearly the guy. And we're like, where did this come from?
I don't think he's going to explode.
Sure. He put up some points last year.
Yeah, he did.
But, yeah, I definitely have the most excitement about Trey Sermon. And then I believe that Raheem Mostert is a little bit overlooked for 2021.
Okay.
And sure, he's been another guy who's been injured a lot, and he's shockingly old because he never really emerged until he was like 28 years old. But Raheem Mostert, though, is blazing fast, and I know that they wanted to feature him last year. Sure, they brought in a lot more for him to compete with this year. They also lost a couple guys. Like, I expect they won't have Jeff Wilson because he's pretty severely injured, at least for part of the season. They also lost Tevin Coleman, as irrelevant as he turned out to be, and they also lost Jerick McKinnon. So there's just a crazy amount of turnover. We just have to know when looking at this running back room that yes, it is difficult to extrapolate which of these guys is going to emerge, but there will be fantasy points here. Yeah. So I think grabbing from the bottom of this depth chart makes a lot of sense, especially if they continue to have this crazy rate of injuries they've been having. And I'm willing to go after Trey Sermon. I think that Elijah Mitchell is a talented player that in terms of like 6-round picks is worth it to me. Jeff Wilson, I was never as hot on in the first place, and now that he's got that injury, I'm really backing away from that possibility that he can be that relevant. But all of Mostert, Sermon, Elijah Mitchell, Wayne Gallman, these are guys that I'm willing to go and get because we know they're going to be efficient in this offense, and you don't know who that emergent player is going to be, and I don't think any of them are expensive enough right now that makes that shot not worth it. They're all worth it to me.
I think so too.
At tight end, the one very obvious guy, the tight end university leader, professor, I don't know.
Dean.
George Kittle. George Kittle is my favorite player in the league, to be honest. I love him. I think people are worrying too much about the injury at this point. He's the type of guy that, even if he does get injured, he's kind of like we talked about Matt Stafford. He's going to play through stuff. And even beyond that, I think he's had some unlucky injuries. I expect him to be, at worst, the tight end three, because there are three, in my opinion, very obvious tight ends at the top. And I think he can easily contend with Travis Kelce up at the top. When I am looking at redraft leagues right now and you see Kelce going at the end of the first and you have Kittle and Waller going at the third, I'm definitely taking the value on Kittle and Waller. Kittle easily could be the tight end one to me this year. He is an elite asset. He was very, very, very close to Kelce 2 years ago. And he will be the focal point of this offense. And it is an offense with a new third overall pick, if you're looking in Dynasty, that has a lot more upside than it even did a year ago. And he was already such an elite asset that he is incredibly valuable. And just because there is some fear about his injury history right now, he is a screaming buy to me. I don't understand why people are fading him, even though that doesn't mean he's going to be cheap. I still just want to go after him because when people are focusing too much on previous injuries, I think it creates opportunity for you to get these elite studs like George Kittle.
Yeah, agreed. Coming in behind George Kittle, you got Ross Dwelly.
Mm-hmm. He's the one guy that I think, you know, we have a couple other names of Mecole Pruitt and also Charlie Werner. And to me, Ross Dwelly's the guy that I expect to be on the field a little bit more.
Yeah, but he'll catch a few passes.
None of these guys, even in the scenario where George Kittle goes down, I think will be very fantasy relevant. So I'm not too excited about these guys for dynasty purposes. George Kittle's clearly the one guy that stands above the rest.
Absolutely. It's inarguable.
Mm-hmm. That's the NFC West breakdown. Of course, before we end this episode, though, we're going to do our Dynasty Buy of the Week. It is back to my turn after Toby gave me the guest number one Mooney last week. And I got to flip off of my notes of Tyler Higbee, because that one is not the one I'm going with. I am instead going with this player. If you guys are interested in how this game works, I'll put it in the description below. Toby, are you ready for hint number one?
Yes.
This 23-year-old had 24 receptions and 3 receiving touchdowns last year.
Laviska Shenault.
It's not Laviska Shenault. I expect he had a little more than 24, but that's a reasonable guess. This player was a 4th-round pick in 2020.
Gabriel Davis.
It's not Gabriel Davis. He is a 4th-round pick, though, so good get. And yeah, I could see those stats all making sense. Hint number three is Sleeper's ADP shows that right now this player is being taken as the tight end 38 in Dynasty, exactly one pick before Tim Tebow. Just had to throw it in there. You know, I saw tight end 39 right below, and I was like, oh my god, yes, he's being this disrespected.
See, I didn't think about... I'm trying to think of a tight end where the position is opened in some way. Because if he only scored 3 touchdowns and hasn't done a whole lot as a tight end at 23, it'd be a change.
Another way is just, do you know your 4th round tight ends in 2020?
I'm going to be honest. I don't know if he's a 4th rounder. Harrison Bryant.
You got it. It's Harrison Bryant. Good job. He was a 4th rounder.
My reasoning is that he's just kind of stepping into... Not, like, more and more targets, but he kind of is at the same time. David Njoku's not... He's just not a factor in any way.
I would agree.
And Austin Hooper is not long for this NFL world, I would say.
I think he's just a decent placeholder type guy, but he isn't the hugest obstacle in the world.
No.
The reason why I want to go get Harrison Bryant right now is because, well, I was looking at ADP, and I thought, how is he going as the tight end 38?
And he's athletically gifted.
There are, like, very irrelevant tight ends. I obviously threw out Tim Tebow. Players going there, that is, I believe, in the 24th round of your dynasty draft is where he's going.
The way he plays, it reminds me of someone with all the profile you'd want him to get.
He was a reasonably hyped up prospect as a receiver. He's definitely a receiving type. I agree that David Njoku, sure, he'll be on the field a little bit this year, maybe in front of Harrison Bryant. I would guess that Harrison Bryant's already going to overtake him. But is there anyone in the league that I can be more sure is switching teams at the end of this year than David Njoku, who's wanted to get off of the Browns for like 4 years?
Trade me. I'm fine. I like it here. Trade me.
Yeah. He's now supposedly perfectly happy. Yeah, no. He's leaving. And so, yeah, I just fully expect Harrison Bryant at worst is the number 2 tight end in a year and dirt cheap. Like, he's probably on your waiver wire if he's being taken in the 24th round.
Yeah.
And he's a very talented receiver as a tight end, which is definitely what I'm looking for. He's got everything throughout the prospecting process that, you know, is someone that I want to target. And that entire group of those 4th round, 5th round, 3rd round tight ends from this class, of course, they're all being taken higher than the tight end 38. Mm-hmm. And most of those guys aren't going to do better than Harrison Bryant did in his rookie season. And they're probably going to get faded in the same way. So why would I go take a Tommy Tremble when I can instead, way cheaper, go get Harrison Bryant, who I think is as good or better of a prospect and in a decent situation.
It's value.
That's all it is. He's a cheap guy. A good guess by you, but...
It probably is because he scored a touchdown against the Steelers and I was sad about it and his name rattled.
He showed enough flashes last year that it impressed me. Yeah. I think he's a guy that... is exciting enough that I would not be surprised if in 2 years he's an actual name. And that's it, everyone. That is our 65th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. We are going to continue. We only have 2 more episodes left of our divisional deep dive series. As always, make sure you find us and everything we've got going on over on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty. Toby, thank you so much again for being here.
Thank you, sir.
And everyone, thank you so much for listening. Have a good one.
Peace.